Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, I have to tell you about the relief and recovery creams from Escape Artists, partially because it is the highest awarded topical brand in all of Colorado that prioritizes quality and consistency. Escape Artists produces these creams that help penetrate for deep muscle tissue discomfort that's fast absorbing. It does a wonderful job on me whenever I have hard workouts, whether that be in the weight room or on a longer run, and my legs are feeling it. My favorite part about Escape Artists is that it's not greasy. It doesn't stain my clothes or my sheets, nothing like that. And I can also find them at my local Lightshade dispensary. That's super easy for me. There's 11 now in the Denver metro area. They've got a great selection of cannabis concentrates, top shelf flower, edibles, tinctures, accessories, so much more. And now you can actually get 25% off non-sale items right now when you use code DNVR. You can shop online at lightshade.com for your pickup or just visit a Lightshade location near you. That's your first pitch. Now let's play ball. Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now you can use code DNVR at signup to get some super special offers like how a simple $5 bet can win you a $150 in free bets instantly. You clinch no matter what. It's that easy with DraftKings Sportsbook, and it's that easy when you use code DNVR at signup. I'm your host, Patrick Lyons. And on today's DNVR Rockies podcast, we do have a nice conversation with Drew Goodman, the man who is now called three different 3,000 hits. Of course, none of them are for the Colorado Rockies, but nevertheless, that's pretty unique company that he is in. He talks about that experience. We break down Ryan Feltner's start on Wednesday. As you're listening to this, you want to know a little bit more about this young man out of Ohio State, and we've got a bit of that breakdown. We also hear Goody's thoughts on all the scuttlebutt from umpires to Yankees fans, and you will probably hear at the end our thoughts on Hermen Marquez and what we thought would happen going into Tuesday's game. But what did happen in Tuesday's game was the Rockies lost again for the second time in a row, their second two-game losing streak. They did lose last Wednesday on the getaway day at Coors Field and game one on Saturday in Detroit. We know that losing streak lasted all of about 5 hours. They'll have to wait longer than that to possibly snap this skid. They lose on Tuesday night 10-3 at Citizens Bank Park. They'll actually have to win the next two games in order to avoid their first series loss of the year. You'll recall they've won four of their five series, and they've split one, that four-game set with the Chicago Cubs. Now, Hermen Marquez going into this game, you know, we really thought that he was going to break out or at least begin to show those flashes of what you can expect from him around midseason form, right? In the conversation with Goodman, he and I kind of talk about, hey, you know what? Kyle Freeland did it on Monday night throwing 100 pitches. Now is about the time where we're starting to see pitchers get comfortable and be in that opening day type form because of that shortened spring training. Now they are just kind of feeling themselves the way they would normally on April 1st. Well, not the case for Hermen Marquez, unfortunately. He does go 3.2 innings pitched, or 3 2/3 innings pitched. He couldn't finish the fourth inning. Gave up four there, left runners on second and third. Chacin did get the final out to ensure more damage wasn't done. Does give up seven runs. Four of them were earned, all three from that third inning. all three from that second inning were unearned. We'll break that down here in just a second. Give up 7 hits, only 1 walk, but only 1 strikeout. That is actually quite rare. It's only the 4th time that Marquez, in I believe 128 starts that he's made as a big leaguer, all with the Rockies, only the 4th time he's recorded only 1 strikeout in a start. 3 of those 4 outings have actually come in the last year. May 4th against the Giants. That was a home game. That was the first game of a doubleheader, I believe. And then September 7th last year against the Nationals. That one was also at home, I believe. 3 of those 4 games overall have come on the road. So I'm wrong there somewhere. One of those games was on the road. I think it was actually the Giants game on May 4th. There was a Giants doubleheader some point last year, but it was not the May 4th one. So kind of a weird statistical anomaly to look at. And, you know, that's something that I think is going to be a story for Herman Marquez going forward. It's something that I know I've talked to a couple people about and are working on. And I usually don't like talking about the articles I'm writing. I just want to get them out there to you to read rather than try to get credit for them ahead of time and let you know that I'm working on them. But bottom line is, who is Herman Marquez? Who is he? Is he the guy that can go out there and throw a no-hitter anytime he has the ball? Yes, most certainly. He's also the guy that, you know, you saw what he did tonight. And you say, that's a shame. Again, only 4 earned runs, but still more earned runs than innings pitched. And right now the Rockies need and want him to become more of that no-hit guy. He's not going to be able to do that, of course, on every single start. He can't do that consistently. But in order to be a true ace, and not just the staff ace, he is going to need to have many, many fewer of these kind of duds, whether it's at home or on the road. Now he throws 80 pitches, only 54 for strikes, 6 groundouts, 3 flyouts, just didn't have his normal command. We saw that in the third where Schwarber walked with 1 out, an error by McMahon, his 3rd in 2 games. Very strange. Very strange. It seems to be a common theme there in Philadelphia with third baseman. Coincidentally, it was on an Alec Baum hit to McMahon, and so Baum ends up reaching base, gets the 2nd there. 2nd and 3rd runners, you had Didi Gregorius with the RBI single. You get a ground out at 2nd, which seems good. Maybe you can escape with just 1 run on the board, but a wild pitch and a throwing error by catcher Dom Nunez, all on the same play, scores 2 runs, which means all 3 of those runs were unearned, and you could really begin to see the body language of Herman Marquez start to change a little bit. He was frustrated, did settle down in the 3rd inning, but in the 4th, more runs, this time all earned. JT Realmuto leads off with a single. Steals 2nd base, actually the 2nd stolen base allowed by Dom Nunez or by the Rockies altogether in this game. Harper stole 1 earlier. So in fact, all 3 of the stolen bases that the Rockies have given up this year, which is still, I believe, tied for the least amount in all of baseball. It was certainly the least going into today with just 1, that being Willie Castro. That might be something I have to hang my hat on if I can remember every single player that stole a base against the Rockies. It's easy right now because it's all happened, you know, like in the last 4 days. But all 3 stolen bases are against Dom Nunez. Again, 2 in this game. Finally got an out. Marquez did there in the 4th with Realmuto on 2nd base. He gets Schwarber to fly out. Then Alec Baum, again, another thorn in the Rockies' side. RBI single, gets a 2nd out on a ground ball. And then Odubel Herrera, who's had really good numbers in his career against Herman Marquez, has an RBI double to right. Mound visit does not straighten things out. RBI single by Segura, double by Rhys Hoskins, chases Herman Marquez for the night. And so disappointing. Tip of the cap to Susie, who, if you followed the DraftKings breakdown, DNVR Rockies on our account there on Twitter, at DNVR _ Rockies, the over-under was 8. It was an even 8. She decided to take the over despite the fact, and she mentioned this, despite the fact that we expected Herman to really break out and do some things. Nevertheless, you know, she nailed that. It was the over 13 runs scored here tonight. Julius Chacin came in next. He finished off the fourth for Marquez, had a good fifth inning. In the sixth, four-pitch walk to Gregorius. Can't do that. And then Odubel Herrera, homers. It's 9-1 at that point. Gets two outs in a row. Then Bryce Harper doubles. That ends Chacin's night. Justin Lawrence gives up a single, and that run does go towards Chacin. So he gives up three runs in an inning and a third of work. After that, though, Justin Lawrence looked really filthy there in the seventh. Struck out Schwarber and Odubel Herrera on three pitches. Keep your eye out for something by Pitching Ninja. You got to expect that to happen. I think Justin Lawrence has already been featured on one, but looked amazing. I mean, Herrera nearly got plunked on the back foot with one of those sliders that Lawrence threw on a strike three. So that was an excellent, excellent performance from Justin Lawrence. Lucas Gilbreth, great to see. 1-2-3 inning with two strikeouts. Second scoreless outing in as many days. Really, really good to see him back on track. The offense, well, it was mostly Charlie Blackmon. It was almost all Charlie Blackmon until the Rockies were able to push a run across home plate in the ninth inning. But Chuck Nasty homers twice, both solo shots to right field. The first one went up into the second deck. It's actually his 13th multi-homer game of his career. 10th time homering at Citizens Bank Park. Most all-time by a Rocky. Actually joins Larry Walker as the only other Rockies player to ever hit 10 or more homers in the same stadium. That is not the NL West, because we know you've got many, many, many opportunities doing that. Larry Walker, as a member of the Rockies, did hit at least 10 home runs. I forget what his number was. Maybe it was 11. 11 home runs at Busch Stadium. The old Busch Stadium, not the new one that the Cardinals playing, but the original Busch Stadium from the 90s and early 2000s. He was the first to ever do that there. In the ninth, if you care to know how the Rockies got that third run, Ryan McMahon walked to open the bases, Ryan McMahon walked to open the frame. It was his third walk of the night. First time with three bases on balls in his career so far. I was surprised to find that when I dug through good old Baseball Reference and Stathead. Brendan Rodgers then got hit by a pitch. I think they reviewed it. They didn't overturn it. It didn't look like it hit him. I think Rodgers thought it hit him. He must have felt something, a piece of thread, not sure. His reaction was pretty quick right there. But nevertheless, you had runners on first and second with no outs. A wild pitch moves them up. Jose Iglesias doubles to score McMahon, but for some reason, Brendan Rodgers did not score from second base on the double. I did not see exactly what happened. I know he got a bad read on it somehow, but I have never seen or never known a runner on second base when a player has hit a double to not score. That's quite strange. Quite strange. We know Rodgers is scuffling right now just a little bit. So you got to hope that he can figure it out here at some point. Connor Joe comes up with two outs there in the ninth. Had another opportunity to extend his hit streak to 13 games, but unfortunately, he came up short. Randall Grichuk, also 10-game hit streak, came up short. Those two streaks came to an end on Tuesday night. Connor Joe's was tied for the longest with Jose Ramirez at 13 games. Grichuk's was tied for fourth longest active hitting streak in all of baseball. And now both of those two, boom, off the board altogether. Should also be noted that Chris Bryant was scratched from the original lineup with lower back soreness. Sam Hilliard took his spot in the starting lineup. He went to center field. Grichuk moved to right, and Connor Joe went to left field to fill in for Bryant. So we hope that KB23 can feel a little bit better for these final two games of the series. They're going to come quick Wednesday night, then the 11:05 day game. We got post-game shows for both of those on Wednesday as well as Thursday before we get into another little homestand. Three games against the Reds, off day on Monday, and three against Juan Soto's Washington Nationals. That's exciting. That will make up for the Reds series, because I'm not sure what's exciting right now about the Cincinnati Reds. We'll figure it out at some point. I think we will. Joey Votto is always interesting, always good to watch. But other than that, we'll have to look at the pitching matchups to see if some of the good younger pitchers for the Reds will be going there for Cincy. I know most of you are going to the DNVR bar on the corner of Colfax and York. Make sure you check out our events page on thednvr.com. If you're not a member, you're missing out on so much, like price breaks for Broncos tailgates, Nuggets party bus, Avs party bus, and yes, a Rockies takeover. Had a very nice conversation today about some plans we've got coming up in the near future this season about some fun stuff when it comes to the Colorado Rockies. Whether they're winning or losing, we are going to have a lot of fun at the DNVR bar. And if you're a member, you get a member-sized beer. You get extra raffle tickets at all of the watch parties. You get access to our members-only Discord. Again, that's only 50 cents for your first month at the DNVR. And if you're ready to go all in, and whenever that point comes for you, your annual membership, when you're ready to go that route, it comes with a free shirt from DNVRLocker.com. Any of our Rocky stuff, anything new that we drop, even if it's a Nuggets shirt, we had two drop recently in the past month, you can get that with your annual membership. And when you're down at the DNVR bar and you want to get yourself one of those member-sized beers, make it an Avalanche Ale. It's a classic American amber that blends pale chocolate and caramel malts in a well-rounded, flavorful beer. Avalanche Ale has caramel malts that lends whispers of toffee sweetness with just a touch of bittering hops that gives this beer such a clean finish. It's been crafted for balance, so you know it's versatile. It's a satisfying anytime beer. I'm talking Breckenridge Brewery's Avalanche Ale. I'm also talking about the NBA playoffs. Despite what might be going down for the Nuggets, NBA playoffs is still going to go on with or without the Denver Nuggets, unfortunately. But you don't have to worry about that because you can actually still get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets instantly. All you got to do is use code DNVR to bet those $5. And guess what? If you're looking to get on the action another way, they got same game parlays where you combine multiple bets from the same game for bigger payouts. Get this, each day there are some risk-free bets that you can make on top of all of that, and it's really wonderful. Check that out again. Whether or not you use code DNVR, you can tap into some serious deals over there at DraftKings Sportsbook. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code DNVR, because when you do, a $5 bet on any NBA team to win their game is going to get you $150 in free bets instantly. That's promo code DNVR at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Now, coming up here, you're going to hear very shortly our conversation with Mr. Drew Goodman, the voice of the Colorado Rockies for AT&T Sportsnet, the host of the Drew Goodman podcast. And we go through a little bit about maybe what we can expect from Ryan Feltner, who's making his third career start on Wednesday night against lefty Ranger Suarez. We break into Feltner's resurgence this season among a bevy of other topics that I mentioned at the start of the show. Umpires, Yankees fans, 3,000 hits, Ryan Feltner, you name it. So without further ado, here is our conversation with Drew Goodman.
It's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's, you know what? It's actually sunny out right now. I just got back from running and it was cloudy, and the weather forecast for later, quite frankly, is not great. But right now they could play. They could play all they wanted. It's beautiful out.
So who's the person that makes the phone calls to get them down to the ballpark a couple hours early to get it in? Is there somebody in charge of that?
Yeah, that's me. And I'm going through the process right now of first I'm calling the Philadelphia guys, and then I'll get around to the Rockies guys and see if we can round everybody up and play in like 45 minutes.
There you go. All right. Stay tuned. I did want to ask you actually where you go running in Philadelphia. That was one of Susie's questions for that, because she's from the Philly area. Like, is there a good spot? I know there's not like a river necessarily.
Yeah, there's most definitely you're a Jersey boy. There's most definitely a river, the Schuylkill River.
Schuylkill, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I can spell it to back up that I'm aware of it, but it's not that close to the center city though, right?
It's probably You know, I, honestly, I typically do the famous run. I run down, Ben Franklin over the stairs of the Art Museum, made famous by, in the Rocky movie, right? And they have a statue at the bottom to the right. I run up those stairs. I run over the backside, and there's a trail over there, and then it goes past all the rowing houses of Penn and Drexel, et cetera. And I run along the Schuylkill, and then turn around and come on back. It's actually a good run. It's one of my favorite runs in the league.
That's awesome. Yeah, I forget how close that stuff is situated there. I ran the Philadelphia Marathon, so I should have some of
that, dude. Yeah.
But when you do those races, you're just following the person that's in front of you. You don't necessarily know where you're at.
What do you mean you're following the person in front of you? I thought you told me you won the Philadelphia Marathon. Was that fiction?
There's somebody who paces. The lead bike is what I mean.
Oh, that's right. I just needed a clarification.
Yeah.
When did you run the Philly Marathon, and do you remember time?
I think that was my PR for maybe like 3 hours, 24 minutes. So
dude, that's good. Good for you, bud.
I mean that's a whiles away ago. So we'll
see
if I can get back to that at some point.
Mm-hmm.
In the Masters division, I mean, maybe I'm not sure where the age brackets are now.
That's cooking, man.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if this is a bit of trivia. You may know it, you may not. How many broadcasters that you know of have called 3,000 hit games? Because I can think of one, and I'm talking to him right now.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Patrick, I mean, and I'm not saying that this is what's about to come out of my mouth is not bullshit, false modesty stuff. I don't pay attention. I'm aware of that, okay? But I'm not like, I've never been, hey, I've done, 5,000 games in a row or streaks, which are, and I probably, this is going to come out wrong because, to some of my brethren, that's really important. But, I wrote this in the book that I did a couple years ago, and I hope this comes out right. But, when they get ready to throw dirt on my ass, I'm not going to be lamenting the game I missed at Dodger Stadium or, at Citi Field. I am so privileged, so thankful to do what I do. I love what I do. But, my legacy is about my three boys. And so I've never paid attention to, you're one of, this many people that have done that. I have no idea. I was, I'm always thrilled to be a small part of whatever happens that given evening. I had a couple people, friends of mine, reach out, man, that's really cool. You got to call his 3,000th hit. And absolutely it is to be there. I actually went on Thursday when they were playing the Yankees because, it's neat to witness history. But my call, the probably the four most monumental baseball moments, at least that I could think of, was, Bonds, controversial as it may be, hitting his 715th against the Rockies, Byung-Young Kim, dead center field they called it Pac Bell, I think, back then. And then Biggio's 3,000th, Ichiro's 3,000th, which I know you're referencing, and then the other day with McMiggy's. And my call's not attached to that because we're the visiting team, as it should be. It's the home television call, the home radio call. So long-winded answer, as I can get long-winded. I have no idea. I was thrilled to be there, and it was neat.
Yeah, no, I think that's cool. I think history like that, you need databases. Like you need a website to go to. I don't know that anyone's actually tracking those kind of things, but it's pretty darn rare because a lot of it could be coincidental. Only so many teams have had guys who've done it. 33 in the history of baseball, and we know with Miguel Cabrera having done it, now the Rockies are tied with a franchise that goes back 100 years in the Washington Senators and Minnesota Twins, and so. It's just a cool piece of history, for people
to
acknowledge.
It is, and I don't take it lightly, and I certainly don't want what I just said to appear in that way. It's just that, this was an accomplishment, of Miguel Cabrera's, and, to be witness to it was really cool, and, to see it unfold, you know, to, I guess, make the call. But again, it's not my call. It's the Detroit guys' calls. And, you know, I think, you know, if I remember right, it was pretty simple. I said, there it is, you know, at number 3,000. And then I just laid out because, you know, I always believe that pictures on television and the natural sound, or nat sound as we call it in the business, that is going to be far more meaningful and profound than anything, you know, gobbledygook that's going to come out of my mouth. And we can put the period on it afterward with, you know, he's now one of seven with 3,500. He's one of three with 3,500 homers and a 300 plus batting average with Mays and Aaron, as you well know, Patrick. And he's soon going to enter a really exclusive group because his next double will give him 600 doubles also, which is a lesser known, I guess, milestone that he is imminently about to eclipse. So, yeah, I mean, really cool. Really, really cool to be there. It's why we all love the game and why it's a shared adoration of the game. And yes, there's competition going on and the Rockies want to win the game, but I don't think anybody was disappointed on the Rocky side to see it happen. And, you know, Senzatella wanted to get him out. I'll share a quick story with you. You know, Buddy had told Senza the day before, which was rained out, he said, listen, you know, if he gets, you know, his the next hit, the 3,000, they're going to stop the game for a while. So be aware of that naturally and, you know, probably throw the baseball a little bit, stay loose and that sort of thing. Stay focused. And Senza looked at Buddy and the look was as if to say, he ain't getting that 3,000 off of me. And as it turned out, you know, clearly he did. Interesting also, Senza is from Venezuela. I was talking to Elias Diaz the next day, and Elias is also from Venezuela. The Rockies have five Venezuelan players, which is tied for the most in baseball, six on their 40-man roster, if you include a big leaguer soon to be in Ezequiel Tovar. And it's really important to those guys. I mean, Miguel Cabrera is larger than life in a baseball-crazed society. Baseball's number one, as Elias told me down there. Soccer is number two. And basketball, he said, would probably be number three. But, you know, it was definitely a big deal. And I think made a little bit more special when you see the reaction that you got from his very dear friend, Jose, you know, when he came over, Iglesias, they live very close to each other in Miami, and he said he wanted to be the first one to, you know, to celebrate with him, and it's an opponent, but it worked out well because Iglesias took the throw from the outfield and immediately sprinted over and gave him a bear hug, and you could tell it was more than just, you know, two guys that played together. They're extremely close.
Yeah, but it was just such a great moment. I didn't know that about the doubles. I figured that Senzatella probably wouldn't want to be a part of history, you know, now that he is. That's kind of neat because this is the first time a foreign-born player who's gotten his 3,000th hit got it off of his countrymen. So I think that's kind of a fun little historic wrinkle.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick, real quick, if I said this, I was having this discussion with somebody, I think it was just yesterday, you're always going to be attached to a moment like that if you're the pitcher, right? And I think the greatest, and correct me if I'm wrong on this or if you disagree, but the greatest pitcher attachment to a hitter milestone in the history of the game, well, there's two that come to mind. It's kind of interesting now. I'm just going, you know, freewheeling here. Is Al Downing giving up 7-15 to Henry Aaron. And I think many baseball people know, hey, who gave up the 7-15, you know, number 7-15 for Henry Aaron, and they'll say Al Downing of the Dodgers. And so Al Downing's known for that. What many people may not realize, Al Downing had a hell of a career. Al Downing was a really good major league starting pitcher. but he's always going to be associated as, you know, the guy that gave up 715. And the other one that comes to mind, another guy that had a really good career, and that is the shot heard around the world, Bobby Thompson, off of Ralph Branca.
That was the one that came to my mind first.
Yeah. And so you always, Ralph Branca, oh, he's the guy that gave up Bobby Thompson, shot heard around the world. Well, what kind of pitcher was Ralph Branca? I don't know, but he gave up Bobby Thompson, shot heard around the world. Ralph Branca was a real good pitcher.
Yeah. So. And those two guys were linked together. I know, I think there was a book about it, perhaps. Bobby Thompson, you know, was very kind and generous and said, hey, actually, let's make this about both of us. And yeah. So those guys together, I think I might even have a photograph from one of the times I went up to Cooperstown that was signed, you know, the image of it, you know, like they have in the newspaper with the dotted line showing the ball, its trajectory going over the left field fence, that was signed by both Branca and Bobby Thompson. So you're right there. That is one of those things. Wouldn't put a 3,000th hit on that level because it's one of 33 on that. So I'm sure people will remember Antonio Senzatella more for his career than this achievement here at this point. Was there anything that like stood out that made this 3,000th hit, you know, different than maybe some of the other ones or unique wrinkles or just something that you enjoyed most about it? Like you said, Iglesias being the first one over there who ran over, that was also really cool about it.
Well, that stands out because it was a human moment. It was a mutual respect moment. It was, this moment is bigger than the competition that's unfolding because it was the first inning, right? And going back to Thursday, as it should be, every time he came up against the Yankees, the crowd stood. They stood, they applauded. It was simultaneously honoring him for all that he has been throughout his career, 15 great years in Detroit, triple crown. And it was also, we want to be standing so we can really lose it when he produces that hit. And it was funny being there in late in the ball game when Aaron Boone did the absolute right baseball thing and walk him. You had a lefty on deck in Austin Meadows. You have a lefty on the mound. First base is unoccupied. It's a one-run game. The Yankees are desperately trying to win it. And, you know, it worked out and it backfired. It worked out, and then Austin Meadows got jammed, but the ball fell, and it turned into a two-run double, and the crowd vociferously booed Aaron Boone, as any crowd would. But from a baseball standpoint, it was the absolute right thing to do. It was not in any way trying to diminish you know, the moment and you know, the crowd having the opportunity to witness this great historic moment.
Yeah, I think AJ Hinch said exactly that too. You know, yeah, I get it. That was the right call as a manager, and it really helped that, hey, Detroit's going to be home for three more games. You know, if that wasn't the case, then ooh, you know, it's kind of similar. It goes back to the Clayton Kershaw thing with him being lifted with the perfect game, and you go, well, you know, there's the moment, and then there's the season, then there's the bigger picture. And sometimes those two things can get lost. Blake Snell in the World Series there in 2020. But I think, you know, Boone did what he needed to do, and all's well that ends well. So
Aaron Boone's paid by the New York Yankees to win games.
Yeah.
Aaron Boone's paid to manage his team and to make moves that will give them the best opportunity to be successful. And that's all he was doing there. And if anybody knows Aaron Boone at all, Aaron Boone's as classy and as good a guy as the game has. So, and somebody that grew up in the game, three generations of Boones have played at the major league level. Believe me, he knows the history. He respects the history. He said as much after. And, you know, if you're a Tiger fan that was there Thursday and couldn't be there Saturday afternoon, disappointing. But that's the nature of, you know, of sport and buying tickets. There is no guarantee that, you know, you're going to go and things are going to unfold and it's going to be serendipitous that, you know, yep, day I bought the ticket, you know, my hero produced that moment.
I think the counter argument to the Boone thing that some people would say that I understand, but as you point out, Aaron Boone is the manager of the Yankees. His goal is to win games. People would say, yeah, but, you know, he's like an ambassador of the game of baseball. You know, what's good for the game? Like, that needs to be considered. Ambassador of the game of baseball is not in his contract. It's not in his duties. So you're right. He's trying to win games. In the process, you know, he is an ambassador. He is a representative. He is going to do all those things. But in that moment, bottom line, you got to win one of those early April games.
Yeah, the same argument then with Montgomery, who started for the Yankees, is that his responsibility as part of this very small fraternity of major league players to throw him a cookie over the middle of the plate?
No, I agree.
Achievement of 3,000 hits is that they came while somebody was 60 feet 6 inches away, trying desperately to get you out, and 3,000 times over 20 years, whomever the pitcher was, couldn't get you out. With the best fielders in the world behind them. That's what greatness is about. That's what achievement's about.
Yeah, speaking of greatness, got to shout out our buddies over at Green Mountain Dental Group. They are leaving Rockies fans, Nuggets, Avs, you name it, with pearly white smiles all around Denver. That's all thanks to Green Mountain Dental Group. Best part right now is when you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam with them, you're going to receive a free Sonicare toothbrush from Green Mountain Dental Group, located just 15 minutes from downtown Denver. Then you go, want to grab a bite to eat? Well, you can go to any of Sexy Pizza's 4 locations in Denver: Capitol Hill, Old South Pearl, Jefferson Park, and Park Hill. Why? Well, they've got hand-tossed deck oven pizza with made-from-scratch each morning dough. That's the difference between them and the other guys. Sexy Pizza is as legit as it gets. You had them probably at the Broncos tailgate if you haven't gone there already on your own. It gets the seal of approval from me. I'm a snob. I'm a pizza snob from New Jersey. So you know what? Sexy Pizza gets the job done and then some. You can also go to their about page at www.sexy.pizza, and you can go to their donations link to actually find out how Sexy Pizza can support your local cause, because they love giving back to the community. They also have a location now down in Trinidad, Colorado. That's Sexy Pizza, www.sexy.pizza. Get yours today. A gentleman who, I don't know if you should have pizza before a start, but maybe he'll be doing that Tuesday night. Ryan Feltner, a young man that, because of the rain out on Friday, you had Senzatella and Gomber stacked up there, and so you're going to need someone to step in there, because Senzatella's not going to go on 3 days rest. He threw his normal batch of pitches, if you will. We still don't know what's going to happen on Thursday, if they'll switch the order up between Gomber and Senzatella. Probably won't happen. But nevertheless, on Wednesday, you got Ryan Feltner making his third career start against the Philadelphia Phillies. He's looked really good so far down in AAA.
That's exciting. And if you go back to spring training, Patrick, and you were down there for quite a while, when the question about starting pitching depth arose with Buddy, the first name he always mentioned, I mean, I know it's been easy for folks who write every day about the Rockies to always go, well, Peter Lambert, you know, he's going to be one of the next guys up because he's coming off Tommy John, and we saw him in the big leagues a couple of years ago, and he's one of the, you know, better prospects a couple of years ago. And, you know, Ryan Rollison, who is a former number one pick. Those are going to be the first two guys to add depth. But if you listen to Buddy, which we do, because his input is far more important than whatever we may think, it's always been Ryan Feltner. Ryan Feltner is number one. And that's not to slight the other two guys who are injured right now, quite frankly. But even if they were not, stuff-wise, Ryan Feltner has the best stuff. And his fastball has seen an uptick at Albuquerque. And I know you've talked about this, Patrick. He's touched 100 miles an hour. This is a starter. It's not a guy coming out of the pen who's going to let it all hang out for 15 to 20 pitches. This is a starter that's been working in the, you know, upper 90s at times. So we saw him briefly last year. Anybody for me that has a sub-4 ERA pitching a few ball games in the Pacific Coast League, and specifically Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is also at altitude, great facility there, but you know, it's hard to not have a big ERA. That's pretty impressive. What does he have, a 3-something right now, Patrick? You know better than I do. Is it, what is it, 350 or 320, something like that, after three or four starts?
3.10.
I mean, you know, man.
2 ERA, yeah.
Yeah, that's like, oh, my gosh, this guy's throwing the ball like Gibson in 68. I don't want to – I'm not getting carried away, okay? But it's nice to see he's earned that opportunity. I'm excited to see it. We all know who follow the Rockies closely. You need to have more than 5, and Chad Kuhl's been just lights out so far.
Wow.
Maybe the best Rocky story along with Connor Joe in the early going, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe this guy, he hadn't been up yet. I mean, he was up briefly last year. But if he can add legitimate quality depth in that rotation, that's a nice boon for the Rockies. So I'm really looking forward to watching him throw the baseball. Tough park to throw in, tough lineup to go against. But I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I like that the Rockies had him, you know, in the clubhouse on Monday, so he can kind of get acclimated for a couple days. We talked about this on the podcast on Sunday. Like, hey, it actually lines up really well. He made the start Friday, struck out 10 batters there, and so you're right. The uptick in that fastball has been really, really nice. He's looked, you know, really solid. And you know, last year we got to see him, but he made the jump from AA. I think a lot of people might forget that. Is that really, I think the last guy before that might have been Eddie Butler back with the Tulsa Driller days. Like, that was like the last guy that made the jump from AA up to the majors. And so, you know, you saw that a little bit with his first start against Atlanta. And then his second start was in Philadelphia. So you kind of like that idea that, hey, I've been here before, literally in this ballpark. He's been with the team now for a couple of days. So he'll be a little bit more comfortable, I think, than normal. So I'm excited to see what he's going to do on Wednesday and going forward, because we know there's a couple doubleheaders coming up, you know, in San Diego with the schedule that got, you know, thrown around and whatnot. So this probably won't be the last time we end up seeing Ryan Feltner as well this season.
No. And again, you're going to need depth. We know that. I mean, it's very unusual. I think, Patrick, the last time the Rockies just kept rolling their rotation through, you know, 5+ months was back in 2009, when I don't think they needed a 6th starter or really much beyond that until September. They just kept rolling their rotation, knock on wood. They had great health that year and they had really good success. And, you know, you could probably make the argument in 2009 that was the most gifted Rockies team. The one that went the furthest, we all know, was 2007. But, you know, the 2009 and 2010 team that stumbled down the stretch, unfortunately, in the final 2 weeks, those top to bottom may have been the best Rockies team, but that rotation stayed intact. Typically, you're going to need a bunch. It's one of the reasons that, you know, Los Angeles, speaking of the Dodgers, every year is so well thought of, not just their fantastic lineup, and the number of headline pitchers that they've had, especially last year when they had, you know, Bueller, Kershaw, and Scherzer, Urias, but they have depth. I mean, and that's what is always mentioned, that, yeah, a guy goes down and there's another guy can step in that's really, really talented. And the good teams, the truly good teams, are going to have that. The teams that win, you know, 88 plus are going to have that kind of depth.
I'm guessing if you didn't watch the Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, you probably saw a couple highlights there. Kyle Schwarber, I mean, we're in Philadelphia, so we might as well talk about it. Does MLB have an issue with umpires in regards to maybe a less than comprehensive, you know, system for grading umpires and working on that? We see what the NFL and the NBA does with their training and their scrutinization. Every play in the NFL, you know, gets a grade on it. Is that something that MLB maybe should look to improve upon?
Yeah, it's kind of there's a little bit of gray area for me, as I understand it. I know they're graded every day, especially the home plate umpire, balls and strikes. They get a grade the next day. And I believe it's either late that night or the very next morning, and they can review it. But the question really is, does it have any effect in terms of games that they work? And I would think particularly in the postseason.
Right.
Or does it seem to be a round robin that, hey, yep, it's, you know, you haven't worked the divisional series in a couple of years. Now you're going to get the divisional series. And they, you know, the umpire have a union, just like the players have a union. I think, like, and this is natural, that, you know, the best should be when, especially when it gets to the postseason, should be on merit working those games. And, you know, I don't know Angel Hernandez. I've met him, you know, a couple times. I remember working out in the same weight room with him. It was opening day, and I think the Rockies opened in Chicago one year against the Cubs many years ago. And, you know, he's he stays really fit, and we're in the weight room, and he was, very, you know, really nice guy. He's always kind of, you know, I guess been thought of as not the best ball and strike umpire, and can be, you know, combative at times with players. You know, I'll just leave it at that, because I, you know, these are things that you've witnessed, and I'm just kind of regurgitating things. The interesting thing about the tirade the other night of Kyle Schwarber, who's one of the best people in baseball. I mean, he was just got so frustrated. It was great tirade, man. In fact, I didn't get a chance to catch up with him yesterday. I spoke with him a couple times when they were in Denver last week, but I'm going to go up to him and give him a high five from the standpoint of go, that was epic. Right. But he was saying, it's not just about me. It's, you know, the zone has been bad on both sides. And you can just read, you know, his, as he was, pantomiming in grand fashion. And, yeah, that way. And he pointed to the other dugout. He said, I'm not just saying it's about the Phillies tonight. It's about both sides. And Craig Counsell basically said as much after the ball game, that it was a big zone both ways. Yeah, I don't know what Major League Baseball does going forward, but I think it's the same in the NFL. There are crews in the NFL that throw, you know, like 30%, 40% more flags than some other crews. I'd prefer to watch the game officiated by the crews that leave some things for the gray area and say, nobody came to watch you throw flags. And I know it's hard trying to see if a 98-mile-an-hour fastball moving, you know, shaved a corner or not. Not easy. But I still believe, I said this last night, somebody was giving me shit on Twitter because I'm still against robo umpires, because the most important defensive position on the field is catching. There's an art to catching. There's an art to, you know, stealing strikes. But I still think on merit, you want the best people, especially when it comes to the postseason. That seems obvious to me.
It does. There are a couple of really good accounts on Twitter. You may have seen them before. That they look at umpiring in different ways. There's Umpire Auditor. They've got 67,000 followers. Actually threw up a statistic that Angel Hernandez on that game on Sunday night, Phillies Brewers, lowest rated umpire on that day, missed 19 calls. You know, was still correct 85%, which you go, actually, that's pretty darn good, but 19 calls can be a lot. And again, where in the game did these come, like in critical moments? So that's important. Ump Scorecards, which I think is the newer of the two, 220 followers on Twitter, they actually break it down to an overall factor for one team over another, basically saying, hey, if you call this a ball versus a strike, okay, well, now the percent might go up for on base percentage, keep the inning going, then what happens after that, and actually can weigh it a little bit, saying, hey, the calls ended up favoring this team, or these were the three calls that shifted, let's say, the win percentage the most. Not a ton, but still, you know, a 3-2 pitch, you know, with the bases loaded. Hey, if you that's called a strike with two outs, that ends the inning. Cool. If it's a ball, that's one extra run, keeps it going. So one pitch can, you know, shift things either way. It's interesting seeing it from those perspectives.
Yeah, Patrick, they rate it, to embellish what you're saying, they rate it two ways. They rate your scorecard on accuracy and consistency. And there are a lot of guys, I've seen, you know, a ton of guys rate over 95% on both. I've seen 98%. in terms of accuracy and also consistency of what the strike zone is. And he was, you know, if you're below 90, that's, you know, not good. And they had him at 88% on both the other night in the Sunday night affair, the 1-0 game that Milwaukee beat Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's interesting how you just shift 5% from 95 to 90%. You're like, oh, that doesn't seem like that much. It's the same thing. You know, a batting average of 270 versus 170. You go, ah, you know, that's 10% right there. That's actually a big difference. We're talking below the Mendoza line there. So it's important.
Yeah, I mean, if you got a one, it's the old swing pitch, the 1-1 pitch. If it goes to 2-1, the batting average is going to be about 200 points higher than if all of a sudden you're battling a 1-2 count. It's huge. It's huge. Yeah.
Another thing that came out from Sunday, curious of your thoughts, the scene there at Yankee Stadium was not a pretty one. We know that in the Northeast, even in the, well, not Southwest, but in Southern California, fans can be incredibly passionate for their teams, and you don't want to discourage that, but there is a line. And, you know, those Yankee fans that were involved in it, not all of them, but the ones that were involved in it were throwing things on the field. You absolutely cannot do that. That from those fans was classless.
Oh, it's simple, and it could happen anywhere. You don't want to paint with a broad brush and say all Yankees fans are that way. Of course they're not. But you have to identify, and in this day and age with, you know, everybody carrying a camera around, you can identify who those fans are, and they're banned for good. They should be. I mean, somebody was telling me that when you're throwing something from the stands, God forbid you actually hit somebody. I mean, if you hit them in the wrong place, I mean, I don't want to get overreact, but it's wrong. What are you doing? So those people need to be banned. And if people around said, hey, yeah, I saw this guy, it should be their civic duty to say, yeah, it was this dude over here. Can't do that.
Yeah, John Boy did a breakdown.
That's not even a debate. Well, hey, what side of the issue you're on? It's a criminal act. Cannot throw an object that could hurt somebody. That to me is simple.
Yeah. Yeah, John Boy, in his breakdown, you know, he's a Yankee fan too. And he, you know, he chastised those people, rightfully so. But you go and you examine the film. There were people that were sitting in the front row. A man was there with his daughter and was like shielding her from it, because again, for every bottle, let's say, that landed on the field, how many people were, you know, 20 rows back going, oh, I can make this throw, and we're throwing things and we're hitting people in the back of the head. Like it's nonsensical.
No, it's criminal.
Yeah.
It's criminal. And there's nothing to discuss there, but it can happen in any ballpark. And you can say, oh, well, you know, that's what happens sometimes when people overindulge. Well, you're responsible for yourself no matter what you do. So if you did overindulge and did something ridiculously foolish and criminal, there's a price to be paid.
Yeah.
That's how I look at that. I
agree with you on that. Will in our chat is asking about a certain high school shortstop prospect from Stillwater, Oklahoma. Any updates on our he's not my buddy. I mean, he's your buddy and he's your buddy's kid. Jackson Holliday, I mean, he's obviously coming into the season, was a top 10, certainly a first-round pick kind of guy. We know the Rockies have the 10th pick overall. Again, what happens in front of them, they have no control over. But Jackson Holliday, you know, still going out there and doing his thing so far this season out in Oklahoma.
Yeah, you know, we'll do a little more research as we get closer and talk to people on the amateur scouting side and get a better feel for what, you know, what they believe Jackson Holliday is and what he will be. And listen, I know he's going to be a hard worker. He's got good bloodlines with Matt. I think many Rockies fans remember the stories that we would tell on the air about Jackson, and even shown some video of it when he was 2 years old, swinging the bat and had unbelievable hand-eye coordination as a tiny little guy in the clubhouse after victories. And, you know, here he is, one of the top talents for this year's draft. It's really cool to see. I do think he's going to sign. I don't think he's going to go to Oklahoma State and play for his uncle and Josh and his dad, who's on the staff as a volunteer assistant. I don't think Matt needs the money from Oklahoma State. And his granddad is involved there as well. I think he's going to sign his, you know, this four holiday kids. The next one is Ethan, and Ethan's even more physical than Jackson. And we'll be talking about Ethan, you know, in a year or two as well for the draft. But it's a great story. I'm happy for the Holiday family, for Matt and Leslie, and wherever Jackson goes, you know, you wish him well. The Rockies under Billy Schmidt historically have done a superb job in drafting offensive talent. They really, you know, pitching's kind of a little more sketchy, but they've really done a very good job in drafting, you know, position player talent.
Yeah. One other question here from Matthew in the chat. Is it concerning that Chris Bryant hasn't hit a home run? I would say no. I wouldn't say we're in the early going so much that, oh, you know, give it some time. All right, you know, hey, we're in 16 games. But if you're doing your research there, even in the small sample size, home runs have been down across baseball. There haven't been, you know, very many as normal. I mean, it was only a couple of days ago, Randall Grichuk was sitting there with no home runs. Now he's got two in back-to-back games. So I'm not concerned. But to your point, Matthew, hey, it's something to just keep your eye on. But it wouldn't surprise me if we were sitting here a week from today and Chris Bryant has himself four home runs.
Home run hitters, guys, and he's a hit. He's a. He wouldn't call himself a home run hitter. He's a guy that's a good hitter that has power. And sometimes it comes in bunches. We've seen that from you know, every guy that produces a good number of home runs. They can have one, and then you look in a week, and they have seven. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. He started out early on. He was getting hits all the time. He snapped, I believe, an 0 for 16 late last night with a clean single to left field. He's going to hit his share of home runs. Coors Field takes away a lot of home runs. You know, here's something interesting. Last year, I think you probably haven't. I'm trying to remember what score he ended up with, 23, 26 home runs, whatever he had. Had he played at Yankee Stadium, he would have had close to 40 home runs.
And it was 48. I think it was something. It was.
Yeah, it was a big. Yeah, it was a big number. And actually, the fewest home runs of, if you look at launch angle and exit velocity, of all the balls he hit last year, the place where he would hit the fewest home runs was Coors Field, and a lot of people do not realize that. So Chris Bryant, he should hit for a higher average at Coors Field. His doubles should go up. I don't necessarily know if his home runs will go up, given that he is playing in a really big ballpark. And yeah, I know the ball flies farther because it's altitude. You made a very good point, Patrick. This year is not. We'll find out more about the baseball as the season unfolds. Everybody's using a humidor. But this is not unusual where home runs are down in April because there's so many cold weather games in the month of April. When things truly warm up and we're sitting here and you and I are doing our thing on this podcast in late July, you know, let's see where he is. But I think there's going to be more doubles for Chris Bryant. There may not necessarily be more home runs than he's hit in the past, but you just want him to be, you know, the tough out he's always been, the formidable offensive player sitting there in the three hole, you know, most days. And that's what I would concern myself with, you know, more than anything when it comes to Bryant.
Yeah. He's much more of a doubles machine. It's funny because for being such a big guy, 6'4", he's got an easy swing and, you know, ball flies off his bat, but he doesn't hit those tape measure shots. I think we've even talked about that before. He's not a guy that goes 440 on the regular, like someone like, you know, CJ Cron. So it's going to be more of the doubles and there might be those home run droughts, but again, batting 281 right now, you know, he's contributing and doing his part at the top of the lineup.
Well, if you overlay his, I think it's 63 home runs the last 3 years. If you overlay him at Coors Field, the number's 28.
I had not seen that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of those would be, you know, doubles and that's not a knock on Chris Bryant. It just is a fact that a lot of people don't acknowledge or, quite frankly, don't do their homework on just how big Coors Field is, you know, especially when you're talking about extreme left center field and even extreme right center field. So I'm not worried about Chris Bryant right now.
We're worried about the game tonight. Let's just briefly touch on the matchup, Herman Marquez versus Zach Eflin. This is Herman's first game pitching away from Coors Field. He did face the Phillies last week, six innings pitched, eight hits, four runs all earned, two walks, five strikeouts, three home runs, Castellanos, Camargo, bomb. He's looking to get himself, you know, back on track. Not that he's been that far off, but I think anytime Herman goes down to sea level, he's really looking to carve up some hitters.
Yeah, I'd like to see some more swing and miss with his slider. The strikeout rate is down for Herman through the first, you know, three starts. We've talked about it ad nauseum. You've talked about it, even when I'm not here, that there's a, you know, a ramp up for starting pitchers that had to take place during the regular season that ordinarily would have taken place in the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League. And with the shortened spring training, you know, starters weren't working as long the first, you know, two, three starts. You know, we had some unevenness in terms of numbers. There was the dead arm period, which we always talk about, you know, usually second, third week of March, that probably affected starters into the start of this regular season in particular. So I'd like to see Herman get some more swings and misses, which is typical of him, especially with his breaking stuff. And, you know, and really hopefully string together some dominant starts like we've seen so many times in the past. One of the things that's been great about this 10-6 start for Colorado is the strength of the club is their, on paper, is their rotation. And they haven't really had, you know, a great number of starts where you go, boy, that was wonderful. Chad Kuhl's been lights out. And he's had, his first one was a little bit shorter, but his last two, terrific. Herman had the great start against the Dodgers in game two of the season. And that, oh, and Gomber. I don't want to forget Gomber in Detroit. He was marvelous. That they've had four starts where you go, man, really, really good. Freeland's been okay. You know, last night he deserved a better fate. The Rockies played. You want to get all the, you know, if you're going to have a crappy game on defense, get them all out of the way in one game. And the Rockies were horrendous defensively yesterday. You're going to have those every once in a great while. Hopefully it's just a great while and not, you know, semi-frequently. But I think that rotation hopefully will get in a groove here in the not too distant future. And, you know, you had it with Gomber, then you had it with Kuhl. Freeland, you know, I thought was solid last night. He ended up with seven strikeouts, certainly deserved a better fate. As we said, defensively, the Rockies, you know, didn't help him out at all. And, you know, and then Herman and get Senza where, you know, he's kind of been off to a slow start. You know, he's going to give up hits, but he's given up way too many hits so far. And get that rotation on a roll. So I look at the 10-6 mark with the rotation just being okay thus far as a really good sign.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Freeland also hit the 100 pitch mark last night. So kind of as you alluded to there, spring training guys are really now starting to get themselves into certainly not midseason form, but that regular season form. And I think we'll see that from Marquez tonight. His last time out last September in Philadelphia, six innings pitched, no runs, one walk, six strikeouts. So I think we'll probably see something similar to that again tonight from Herman.
Yeah, I hope so. And you know, this is a good lineup. You know that, Patrick. And I know they've underachieved a little bit so far. But when you have to navigate, you know, Harper and Castellanos and Gene Segura, let's not forget. I mean, Gene Segura is a good offensive player. You know, and Rhys Hoskins is going to give you a good at bat. Alec Bohm at the bottom of the lineup has been, you know, been productive. But, you know, Schwarber, I know the average isn't pretty, but, you know, he can hit one over the stadium. And Castellanos, it's a good lineup, and it's a veteran lineup. And I said this on the air last night, you don't want to be around when they start putting a hot streak together because they're going to put up some big numbers. When Herman's been on, he can shut down any team in any ballpark. And to your point, he did it a year ago here, and hopefully he's able to do that tonight.
Do you realize that the Rockies have had only one losing streak this year? That, of course, was Wednesday and then the first game on Saturday. So they've had one two-game losing streak, and that lasted all of 5 hours because they won game two. So technically speaking, I don't think they've had a true losing streak yet. And so that we'll see if they can kind of stave off a little bit, because if they lose tonight, it's going to be at least a day. It won't be 5 hours until they snap the skid. So I think that winning series and, you know, preventing these long losing streaks, I think that's a sign of a winner. And you know, you can't win a pennant in April, but you can certainly lose one. And, you know, the Rockies are solid. So it'll be fun to see what they do tonight.
Yeah, and let's not lose sight of this, Patrick, that, and again, I know you've touched on this, that last year they didn't win their fourth road game until May the 30th. They were awful on the road. I mean, it was pathetic. And they were much better in the second half, particularly the last 30. They went 15-15 out on the road. Now, they've won 4 out of 6 on the road. For the Rockies to be a postseason team, they have to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 500. On the road, and then win, you know, obviously far more than they lose at Coors Field, as they did last year. Even though last year, you know, wasn't by any stretch a good year, they won only 74 games. But that's how the math has to work. And small sample size, but you know, they've won 4 out of 6. Honestly, if you can leave Philadelphia with a split, you say that's good, and then they'd go home and they'd have won, you know, 4 games out of a 7-game road trip, and you go back home. So yeah, that's another element of this start that you like. They've been much better on the road, more competitive on the road, and hopefully the bats bounce back and the defense bounces back tonight.
That's right. Make sure you are downloading and subscribing to Drew Goodman Podcast, which drops every Thursday. You got your guest yet? I know we're in the final hours here, so you're probably getting close to having that interview, or maybe you've already had it.
I beat you to it. Actually, I was going to do it today, Patrick, because I'd lined this up over the weekend, but we ended up taping it yesterday. Christopher John
Crone.
CJ Crone. Christopher John Crone will be joining me this week. Connor Joe still, you know, they all stay up there in perpetuity. But it was great visiting with Connor Joe last week, the greatest Rocky of them all, as my partner says every night. By the way, how far did he hit that ball last night?
Unbelievable.
First pitch of the game, bang. Greatest Rocky of them all. Spilly was like, you know, beside himself. It was awesome.
I was going to say, in the clip that I saw, I think it was Rocks Gifts Vids, where the last thing you hear before it the video stops is, ugh, like he just makes a yuck sound just because he hit the ball so far. And you just hear Spilly's reaction to that. Like, ugh, he's so good.
Yeah, he's awesome, man. He's awesome. And, but yeah, CJ Crone, baseball family, found a home in Colorado. It's off to a terrific start. CJ will be on the show this week.
Man, I'm telling you, if they're on the Drew Goodman Podcast, they're about to have a very good week. And
I hope
CJ
so.
Crone's had nothing but good weeks so far already. So April Player of the Month, I don't know. We'll kind of wait and see what happens. They got a couple more games against Cincinnati. That might be the right team to help boost those stats a little bit more for Christopher John. We'll see.
Yeah, hope there's good karma there on the old podcast.
Drew Goodman Bump. That's what it is. Follow him on Twitter at DrewGoodman42. We are at DNVR_Rockies. I'm at Patrick D. Lyons. And also make sure you're following at the Susie Hunter. She'll be back tomorrow with us. This has been great. It's been wonderful. But you know what they say about momentum? It's only as good as tomorrow's podcast. So talk to you then.